Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Two Black Guys of Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and financially knowledgeable. So, Big Sean, have you ever wondered why someone got a better deal on something than you? Or why sometimes when you ask for something, you normally just don't get it?
I'm wondering, where are you going with this today, Joe? Because this old man has some, I believe, some negotiating skills. Then wasn't I able to get to negotiate you to come on this show, Derek?
Yeah. Nevertheless, I, the credit king, invited my brother from another mother, the negotiating king, Kwame Christian, to help break down the art of negotiating. Get ready to learn how to upgrade your negotiation skills. And guess what, Sean?
I see where you're going with this. You think I don't got negotiating skills, so you brought in a ringer for me. Okay, let's see what this Kwame Christian got. Okay, I get it.
I'm just telling you, don't hate, negotiate. You're listening to Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Matt, take us to commercial.
This sponsorship break is brought to you by Clean. Clean is a financial literacy program designed to educate youth in a fun and interactive way through class lessons, workshops, and web seminars. To bring it to a school or organization near you, please visit www.financiallyclean.com.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit. We're here with Big Sean, the lady with the facts, and our guest, Kwame Christian. For those of you who don't know, Kwame is a negotiation consultant, TED Talk speaker, business lawyer, podcast, author. The list just goes on and on. I hope I'm not leaving anything out. If I am, please forgive me. But Kwame, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, man, it's great to be here. The two most important things you missed were father and husband. And so that's where I get the majority of my negotiation experience now. So it's good to be here.
Well, I'm going to get right into it, Mr. Kwame, Mr. Competitor, Mr. Ringer on this show. My brother, I've seen a lot of people do different things, but this is the first time I'm meeting a negotiation consultant. How did a Caribbean man living in Ohio find his way in this field?
Well, I made it up. Just completely made this
love
up.
It.
And it's funny because I kind of stumbled into this. My degree was in psychology, and I always wanted to be a clinical psychologist. And somehow I lost my way, and I started to get into politics. And so I said, you know what? The best way for me to help people is to help as many people as I can. So if I become a politician and I can sway policy, that's a lot more efficient than just helping one person at a time through counseling. And so I got my psych degree, and then I did a dual degree with a Master of Public Policy and a law degree. And as I started to learn more about law and politics, I started to like it less and less. And I was that guy who was being sworn in after passing the bar as a licensed attorney, asking myself what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so the thing that was interesting is while I was in law school, I stumbled upon negotiation. I took this class. I fell in love with it because it was the first time I saw psychology in the law. I saw psychology used for a legal or business purpose. So I said to myself, I don't know what it is I'm going to do, but it has to include this. And so now I'm seeing an opportunity for me to help people when it comes to these difficult conversations, because the way I see it, the best things in life lie on the other side of difficult conversations. But we have emotional and psychological barriers that prevent us from having these conversations. So I approach it from the inside out, helping people to overcome those fears so they can have those conversations and start to have the impact in the world that they see for themselves.
And Christian, it's funny you should say that because, you know, I'm the lady with the history and the stats and the cold hard facts, right? So I looked up the definition of negotiation. And they said it's quite simply a discussion aimed at reaching an agreement. Mm-hmm. Now, someone like me, I'll tell you, when I think negotiation, it's angst, it's intimidation, it's stressful. But to read that definition, that quite simply, it's a discussion aimed at reaching an agreement. Like, I mean, that was kind of mind-blowing for me. I mean, just because of what you just mentioned right then and there, you know, being able to help people with their fears and everything else.
Exactly. And that's the thing that people don't realize. They think that they negotiate once or maybe twice a year. They're buying a house, they're buying a car, and hopefully they're negotiating their salary. Hopefully we get a chance to talk about that too. But, you know, the reality is we're negotiating every day, unless you're a hermit, right? Anytime you're interacting with people, you're negotiating. And really, when you think about just persuasion in general, every single conversation that we have has a persuasive bend. If we even talk about a movie that we watched recently, the goal of my conversation isn't simply to alert you of the fact that I watched a movie. I'm going to tell you whether I liked it, whether I didn't, and why you should feel the same way. And so when I stepped back and realized it, I had the same response as you. I said, this is incredible, because this skill, acquiring this skill, could be one of the most important things that we can acquire when it comes to strengthening our relationships with the people around us and getting what we want and deserve out of life.
You know, you are so right, Kwame, because I see negotiating as a day-to-day activity as well, from negotiating with your kids, your peers, your family, et cetera. And I believe those that negotiate will have more control and drive to success. I mean, in other words, those that negotiate better have a greater chance of achieving success. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that's the biggest barrier, like I said, is negotiating awareness, negotiation awareness. We just don't realize that these opportunities to negotiate are happening. And you think about it this way. You take person A and you take person B, and they are the same amount of intelligence. They do the same amount of work, same quality of work. But person A asks for a raise and person B doesn't. Person B thinks that their work should be recognized and it speaks for themselves. Well, the reality is you speak for yourself. and there's no reason for that person A to get more money than you. But the reality is there is one reason, and it's their ability to negotiate, their willingness to negotiate, really. And when you look at the statistics and break it down, and I think this is where the money comes in, at the end of the day, if you're negotiating, every ceiling is a new floor. If I'm working at a company and I negotiate from 60 to 65, I start the next negotiation from 65, and I could get up to 70. And so this is how the advantages compound at the end of your life, especially if you're in a competitive career where you can start off or come close to six figures and then move up from there. We're talking easily millions, especially when you consider the opportunity cost that comes with investment. So this is a critical skill when it comes to moving forward in the professional world.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I was going to say, I've actually got a friend who missed out on a lot of money because she didn't negotiate. After she started working, she found out that all she had to do was say something and they would have given her, you know, an additional $15,000 at the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you should mention that, Derek, because they did a study. And just so you know, they did a study with graduates from Carnegie Mellon University. And 57% of the men negotiated their salary, but only 8% of women did. Now, to even take that a step further, they say there's 32% of people just in general negotiate all the time, but 18% never do. And they cited the reason was fear.
I'm telling you, I believe negotiation starts with confidence. And I always say, go hard or go home. And I say, I believe, you know, you're better off, I always say, to go hard when you're starting a job to negotiate your salary than wait till you get into that job and start continuing asking for more money. What do you think about that, Mr. Ringer?
Absolutely. You know, just to add on to Dion's point there, I'm a big time nerd, so I'll cite several books. Hopefully, remind me to cite my own book.
You got it.
But the book reference there is Women Don't Ask by Linda Babcock and Sarah Lashver. They were the professors from Carnegie Mellon who did that research. And the other thing that they found was that even when women did ask, their requests were significantly less aggressive. They asked for less. And what you find is that one of the most powerful negotiating techniques is anchoring. And anchoring is when you make the most aggressive ask that you can reasonably justify. And that simple thing changes the reference point for the rest of the discussion. It makes you significantly more likely to get what it is that you want out of the negotiation. And I know maybe we can get more into tactics later, but I just wanted to throw that out there. That's one of the major reasons, one of the many reasons why we have a wage gap. But there is something that we could do about it in our own lives when it comes to the way that we negotiate, instead of having to wait for society to become equitable. Who knows how long that could take.
I believe there's two types of negotiating. Negotiating your personal life and negotiating your professional life, and negotiating your private life. What do you see as a difference between those two, Kwame?
Nothing.
I love it.
Nothing. And that's the problem. But people really overthink it. It just really comes down to the willingness to have the conversations. And it's interesting for me. I realize that I'm better at it professionally than I am personally, because there's more at stake. I'm willing to walk away from anything in the real world, in the business world, but their relationships I can't lose in my personal life. And that's the thing. One of the most difficult emotional barriers for people when it comes to negotiation is the feeling of need. If you feel like you need the deal, then you're going to make unnecessary concessions. So in the business world, I think about it with confidence. My definition of confidence is a general feeling of okayness with whatever the outcome. We get a deal, all right. If we don't get a deal, all right. I'm good. Now, the issue when it comes to the personal life is that it's like, I don't get a deal. Oh, my marriage.
Right.
Yeah, you can't exactly do that.
And so that's why it's more difficult at home. And again, bringing it back to the gender issues within negotiation, it even applies at home, because what we're finding now is that the significant portion of the relationships are dual income relationships now in today's age, right? But the issue is that the domestic responsibilities haven't been diversified the same way that the portfolio has been diversified. So what that means is that when both the man and the woman have stress at work, the man comes home and relaxes, the woman comes home and works more. And so so home can be even more stressful. And so when you think about negotiating anything, shout out to the name of my podcast,
Negotiation. Hey.
when you think about that, you don't just negotiate at work. You also have to negotiate with the people you love at home. And so if you have those conversations, it could lead to more equity at home when it comes down to the breakdown of domestic responsibilities.
Wow. Okay, I can see why Derek picked you up. You're earning your pay today.
See what I'm saying?
You're doing your thing.
But ask for Ray.
Close for this show. Derek, Dion, I think we need to negotiate a little better here amongst ourselves as friends, okay? But hey, it's Kwame. It's two black guys with good credit. Don't hate, negotiate. Matt, take us to commercial.
KnickKnackDirect.com is a fast, easy way to shop online. To buy an item from any U.S. website, just go to KnickKnackDirect.com. That's NICNATDirect.com. Choose your method of payment and we'll ship, handle duties, and deliver your item straight to your door. I'm Sean of KnickKnackDirect.com, and you have my word.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and financially knowledgeable. We're here trying to make sure that you don't hate, negotiate. We're here with Kwame Christian, and we're getting into some of our tips and tricks. Sean?
Well, let's talk about leveraging. I love to leverage, Kwame. Part of my negotiating tactic is always trying to figure out what I have from what I can get and what I can leverage. So how important is leveraging when it comes to negotiating?
It's critical. And I think before you get into any type of negotiation, there needs to be an analysis of the power in the negotiation. What's the power dynamic look like? Who has the leverage and why? And simply put, when it comes to leverage, it's who needs the deal more. And the person who needs the deal more will be leveraged, right? Because if you need that, you're going to need to give more concessions in order to get that. And I have a free gift for you.
Well, let me get a little deeper with that, because I'm when I'm sitting across the table with somebody, I'm trying to pull that the leverage to me and not give it back and control the conversation and dictate the pace. Even though sometimes I maybe make them feel like they're controlling it, I'm giving them the control to take back the control. Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. So when we're talking about controlling the conversation, there's one simple way to do it. And you all are doing a fantastic job of doing it right now. Because think about it. I'm on your show, right? I'm talking more than all of you because I'm the guest. You all are the host. You're asking me questions. I'm responding. And so in chess, there's a concept called the initiative. The person who has the initiative is the person who's leading the dance. I'm making a move, and then the person responds to me. And that's where you want to be in chess. And the same thing with negotiation. So the way that you're leading this conversation is by asking questions. You all are asking fantastic questions, and you're getting me to share. You're getting me to divulge information, and it creates an information asymmetry. As the conversation goes on, you learn more about me than I learn about you because I'm doing the talking. And so my goal in every negotiation is to maintain a 70-30 ratio. I call this the 70-30 rule, where I get the other side talking 70% of the time, and I'm talking 30% of the time. And if I know if I'm doing that, that means I'm getting more information, which gives me more power. And it also means that I'm controlling the conversation. I'm leading them where I want them to go.
Now along those lines with leverage and trying to force things in a certain direction, do you feel like there's power in conceding? Maybe, you know, live to fight another day? Well, I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
Well, we need to get a good definition of concession on the table, right? If we're talking about concession, living to fight another day, that kind of implies walking away from the deal. And yeah, definitely, if the deal doesn't work for you, then you have to be willing to walk away. But pulling it back, you can use concession as a strategy. And so when we do make concessions, they're not just concessions where we're giving free donations to everything to somebody else. What we're doing is we're pairing things. It's an if-then proposition. If I give you that, then you give me that. And so we're not just talking about concessions in general. We're talking about reciprocal concessions. And so that's something that people often miss when it comes to making concessions in negotiations. You don't just give stuff away. You make a concession in order to advance your overall strategy. And that comes with the pairing of a reciprocal concession from the other side.
You know what I just want to kind of tap into, which I thought was fascinating? I read an article about basically the nonverbal cues that are involved in negotiation and how even when two or more people are actually negotiating, how their body language even starts to mimic each other, which actually starts creating this kind of space of trust. I just want to hear you speak on that because I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, the more you learn about body language, the more you realize that people's bodies are screaming at you.
Alrighty.
We often don't realize it, right? And so the thing is, if we can pay attention to body language, we're going to gather a lot more information than what is being said to us. And so the main thing that we need to recognize from body language are a couple things. Number one, body language doesn't really tell us veracity versus dishonesty, but it does tell us comfort versus discomfort. And so that is a signal that we can pick up on and we can follow in with more questions. Okay, they said that, but their body language displayed a lack of confidence. It changed. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? So I need to ask some more questions and dig deeper because there's something there that I'm not hearing, but I'm seeing. right? Mm-hmm. The other thing that's important to recognize, and I think this is the most important thing, is that we need to establish a baseline. So if this is the first time I'm meeting you, then I can't really make accurate reads when it comes to body language. So if somebody, I had a friend one time, because of his upbringing, his parents always told him to keep his arms crossed as a sign of humility. So he would literally walk with his arms crossed, arms folded. And so now that position just feels comfortable for him. But if you don't know that, you would look at him and say, oh, he's closed off, he's guarded, mm-hmm. he's holding something back. But now that you understand after a couple meetings with him, hey, his arms are always like that. I can't take anything from that stimulus, right? And so a book reference on that is What Everybody is Thinking by Joe Navarro, FBI guy. Really, really great book. So if you really want to get deeper on that, check that book out.
Well, make sure you don't look at my posture then. I don't want you to mimic me and I lose my mind.
I'll tell you this, Kwame. It's funny that everything you're saying, like how I negotiate, how I think of things is, you know, gets back to my competitiveness playing sports, playing basketball especially. Like when I step on a court, I size everybody up in my head. Oh, he's big. This is what I'm going to do to him. He's small. This is what I'm going to do to him. Or he can't shoot. And I look for weaknesses. So when I'm negotiating, going into a room, my competitiveness in me is sizing everybody up, building up my confidence. And then I'm listening to conversation and looking for places of weakness and places to attack. And I think, like you said, body language, posture, all that plays into my psyche. If I see somebody, their body language isn't confident, I'm like, okay, this could be possibly the weak link, and this is a person that I can kind of prey on. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And see, I'm glad you're at a position in your life where you can step onto the basketball court and make reads, because right now I'm at a position where I step on the basketball court and I get injured. Instant.
Oh no, my knees are shot. My knees are shot. I play basketball in my head,
Yeah, no,
definitely a metaphor, not real life.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, though. And the Harvard Business Review put out a really, really interesting article recently called "How Being Nice in Negotiation Can Backfire," and it's fascinating, especially coming out of that school, because they were the champions of the win-win collaborative style of negotiation. And this article seems to fly in the face of it. And what they found is that when you're more assertive, people negotiate less with you. There's less pushback. You get better mm-hmm. deals. And I looked at the article, looked at the research, and broke it down and realized that really what we want to do is we want to have a collaborative, friendly style of negotiation when it comes to expanding the pie, which is the metaphor they use for being creative and creating value for both parties. So say it's a salary negotiation. Let's talk about different things that I could provide for the company if I join the team. Let's talk about different benefits, those type of things. We're creating more value for everything. But then when it comes to dividing the pie, this is the value claiming portion of it, that's when you need to be more assertive, less friendly, laughy, giggly, and just more assertive. And to your point, when it comes to you on the basketball court, you can see those weak links. When you go up against somebody and at the value claiming portion of the negotiation,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
speech and if they're laughing and joking and sounding tentative, then you realize that's somebody that I can push. I can push them and they're going to be more flexible, because just making this read, given the fact that we've entered the competitive stage of this negotiation and they're trying to still be friendly, I feel as though I can push that person more and get more concessions because they're more concerned about the relationship than getting value. And so we need to make sure that we're not giving off those same signs, and we're being assertive when we need to, friendly when we need to, but also recognizing the potential weakness in the other side too.
I want to say one thing. So you agree that being too nice is not a strategic, it's not a strong skill in negotiating. It's not something that's required, because there's so many people that think that being overly nice is going to help negotiate a deal. Do you believe in that?
I think what we need to do is we need to take a step back and figure out what the goal of the entire conversation is. And depending on the conversation, it will require a different tone and a different tone at different parts of the conversation. Think about it as a parent. And so you could just say being nice as a parent isn't required. And yeah, I mean, that's definitely true, but you still want to have a good relationship with your kids. So when it comes to discipline, that's when you start to, you put on the Mufasa voice, right? But then when you're building that relationship, you want your child to have the type of relationship that they're comfortable opening up to you and sharing information. So as you're building the relationship with the other side, you want to be friendly. Like the voice that I'm talking to you now, like how I sound now is the same.
Your friendly voice?
Contact. Yeah.
I'm
waiting for your ass.
Yeah.
Like
and I'll be honest, this is how I sound in my negotiations. I crack jokes and things like that. But then when we start to come down to the numbers, that's when it gets serious, because I'm setting people up because I want them to feel comfortable giving me information. If I'm asking questions, mm-hmm. when your guard is down, you're more likely to give me information.
You're disarming them early. Okay.
Exactly. But then when it comes to the time where I'm saying, hey, this is the deal, this is my offer, and especially when it comes to putting boundaries, no, I absolutely can't do that. And here's why. That's when it gets a lot more serious, a lot more assertive, and a lot less friendly. Not unfriendly, but at that point, we're down to business, and I need to make sure that they don't read any flexibility into what I'm saying, because your tone can negate a lot of the pushback that you could receive in the conversation.
And don't be afraid of that dead space, right? That quiet moment.
Oh, that's
huge. Feels like hours.
It feels like hours. Listen, so I was in a mediation one time, and the longest I waited in a negotiation in silence after saying something was, I think it was 43 seconds.
Wow.
And the only reason I was able to withstand that painful dead space was I counted and I said to myself, Kwame, if you make it through this, it will be the best story for your negotiation podcast.
Yeah. Now, did you just stare at him the whole time? Did you guys just lock eyes and not say anything? How did, because people seem to have a fear of that if they're face to face with someone and to not say anything. So set the stage a little bit. What, you know, did you lock eyes with them and, you know, you guys had to stare off and make faces or something? How did it work exactly?
No, not like that. And so the thing is, when you are trying to think about the goal of establishing dominance, there's some subtle ways to do it. Like, for instance, like I mentioned earlier, asking questions. That's how you're controlling the conversation, right? Some people who are less nuanced, they might establish dominance by maintaining awkward levels of eye contact. And I mean, that's a really obvious way of trying to assert dominance over somebody. And when it's really obvious, then it invites obvious pushback, right? But if you do it in a way that's more subtle, like asking questions, it seems collaborative. So you go along with it. There's less pushback. So I didn't want to lock eyes with him. So typically you lock eyes for 3 to 4 seconds, then you look away. I never look down, because looking down is a sign of submission.
Look
to the side, yeah. Or look up.
That's what like, conversation you have in there. You don't, as you talking like you from the hood, you don't look, you look, you not look down.
Never look down.
You down, get
never
you shot.
Look down. Exactly. So when I'm having those moments of silence, I pass the time by pretending to write notes. If you're that's in the business fun. Negotiation, nobody's going to malign you for taking notes. It's like, hey, man, stop taking so many notes. Nobody's going to say that. It's always seen as a legitimate move. And so I'll just, you know, write down some notes and let the thing go. Now, if it's something, if they're waiting for me to say something, I'll lock eyes for about 3 to 4 seconds, look up and think, show them that I'm processing. And what's interesting, though, is that oftentimes people will fill that silence with words. I want people to talk.
Right.
Well, I remember my lawyer would always say to me, when we went to court for anything, she would always say, you know, when things are going your way, you need to shut up. Silent.
Yep.
Because sometimes you'll talk yourself right out of a deal. You know.
Exactly.
So silence is good. You know, and that's, if you know you put your work in and you said everything you need to say, you just gotta tally it over and see what they come back with.
Exactly.
Some people just keep talking. Sometimes over talking is an insecurity.
Yeah. Well, think about it. Let's dig deeper into this. Let's get nerdy for a moment. Talk about it psychologically. If you are a person who has less power in the negotiation and you see yourself as lower because you're insecure, then you're going to constantly be trying to convince other people of your value because you're trying to convince yourself of your value, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm a young up-and-coming tech person and I get somehow score a meeting with Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates or something like that, you know, if I'm in that meeting, Bill Gates isn't going to be explaining why he has a valid place in the tech industry. It is what it is. It's well understood. But me, as the young upstart, I'm going to be talking and saying, hey, I accomplished this. I did this. I did that. I did this. And this is why you should give me a moment of your time or have some kind of modicum of respect. And so what you're doing is, if you take it back to the savannah, it's a chaser versus a chasee dichotomy. Who's chasing who? And so if you're creating that situation where you're getting somebody to chase you, then they're following you, right? And so if I'm having a situation where I'm having a negotiation and they ask me something, I clearly don't like it, but I respond with 5 seconds of silence, what often happens is they jump in and start to explain themselves. And so now it's creating the psychological relationship where they feel like they need to keep on giving more information to earn my respect, to make it seem like, hey, what I said has value. Great. Continue to get into that pattern of feeling that you need to give me more, because then when it comes to the value claiming portion of the negotiation, we've established that pattern. Now you feel like you need to give me more in order to earn that deal. And I want you to be in that pattern of giving concessions.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Kwame. I agree with you, because I've been in situations that I'm sure myself have done it, where you're just rambling on for nothing because you feel like you shouldn't be at this table. And I say it all the time. If you got an invite to the party, you belong at the party. So with that being said, listeners, take note. Keep it quiet. Be confident. Listen to Kwame, the man. He's earning his pay. It's two black guys. Good credit. Don't hate. Negotiate. Matt, take us to commercial.
This commercial break is brought to you by Canvas Malibu. Canvas Malibu is a boutique and contemporary art gallery in Malibu, California. At Canvas Malibu, it starts with art, and their curated offering of shoes, apparel, accessories, and art are a definite must-see. Canvas Malibu is located in the Malibu Country Mart or online at canvasmalibu.com.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit. You're listening to Don't Hate, Negotiate. So we're here with Kwame Christian. And Kwame, right now we're going to do our speed round. So we're going to ask you a couple questions. We're looking for concise answers here, so something short. Some quick takeaways, okay? You ready?
Sounds like a plan, my man.
Okay, all right. So what would you do if you had to negotiate a car loan or lease with a pushy salesperson?
I would leave and find another one.
I'm with him.
Yeah, okay. So my strategy there is to find the car that I want, call every dealer with the best price, and then say, hey, I'm going to go to the one with the best price and say, what is the best offer that you can give me right now? Narrow it down to the best two, then go in person and say, hey, I'm going with this other person unless you get a better deal, and have them bid against themselves. If they're pushy, it doesn't matter, because they're going to be competitive and they'll want to win.
That's great.
Nice.
All right.
Drop the mic.
All right, Kwame. How about this one? You're negotiating with your spouse. You want to save more, but they want to spend less. At the same time, you're trying to convince them to take a vacation.
So I want to spend more, they want to spend less. What I would do is I'd ask questions to figure out what it is that they really want, because it's not that people want to save money. There's nobody's excited about saving money. It's saving money for a specific purpose. So I'd find a way to get to that specific purpose that they want while still getting what I want. So I would come up with a strategic plan that allows them to win, but also allows me to get what I want out of this deal. So maybe it's saving later, spending now.
Oh, okay.
All right, Mr. Ringer. All right.
Okay, taking notes.
I'm just saying.
I thought I was a negotiating man, but okay. Take a little backstep, but I got a tough one for you here, Mr. Ringer here. Since I'm the real estate guy and I'm always negotiating a price with a seller, I'm negotiating with the purchaser, what advice do you have for me, big guy?
Always use anchoring. So like I said, this is the most aggressive offer that you can reasonably make. So the test that you want to use is the because test. If you can't finish this sentence, "I'm asking for this because," then that means that you don't have a good enough offer. So take the offer that you plan on making, first of all, and you want to make it first before they make an offer, and take it and make it a little bit more aggressive, but not too aggressive to the point where you lose credibility, and start the negotiation off there. Every single study shows that this simple technique is the thing that'll increase the value you get out of your negotiations.
Well, let me just, I got to do a part B, because I'm the guy that always likes to offer a price that's borderline insulting, just to find out their bottom line. Like, not to the point where they don't know what I'm talking about, but a price that's like, okay, You're insulting me with that price, but it's borderline. It's on a border. You agree?
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. As long as you don't, okay. As long as you don't cross that line. And the other thing is, you have to recognize the other issues too, because it's usually not just money. We have the closing date, repairs, all of those things. Anchoring is a legitimate tool that you could use on each of those issues, and you can use it socially with family and friends too. So just find ways to move the needle when it comes to those specific issues.
Okay. So Sean's a real estate guy. I work in the corporate world. So what would you do for someone that needs to negotiate a raise?
So again, I would use that anchor. But before we do that, we need to ask ourselves where we're coming from. Like you said, that's a raise. That's negotiating from the inside. So it's a little bit different from negotiating your initial salary. So what I would first do is take a step back and make it like a 3 to 4 month strategy. Step one, I would gather some information. What does my manager want? Because that often is different from what's in the job description. So I'd have a negotiation for that information. What is a win for him or her? What would warrant a raise? And then once I get that information, I'd set up a second meeting where I do those things and I can prove it. And then in the third meeting, which is a little bit later, then I would let them know that I'm looking for a raise. And I would make my request very specifically using the anchoring technique I described earlier.
Now, I've got to ask you a follow-up. I've got to, just real quick. So if you're looking for a new job, when you're going in, I actually don't use anchoring. I do the opposite. They ask me what salary I'm looking for. I don't give them one. I want to hear what they're going to offer first. I know what my number is and go from there. It's worked in my cases, but what would you think about that?
See, that's why you're a black man with good credit, because you're smart.
No.
So here's the thing. So here's the rule of thumb when it comes to making the first offer. If you know as much or more than the other side, you make the first offer. If the other side knows more information than you, then you wait for them to make the first offer. Because think about it. If you're in the position right now, you already know what you make. You have a reasonable idea of what the next step up would be. So you can make a competent first offer. But if you're coming from the outside in, you understand what the market is, but you don't know much about the finances of this particular business. And so exactly. When you go into that negotiation and you say, you know what, I am going to ask for $120,000. That's actually 5% above market. I'm going to make that request. And then the hiring manager says, $120,000? Yeah, absolutely. We can do that. I'm like, what? No.
Oh.
You didn't know enough. You shouldn't have made the offer. And so that's one of those few situations where you, plan A is a counter.
Perfect.
A is the counter. Got it. Okay.
See, I knew some things, Sean. I'm just saying, I knew some things.
Yeah.
All right. So you had the real estate guy, you had the corporate guy. Now they also know, I mean, I worked in fashion for 20 years, so I'm the fashion gal. Okay. And I'm trying to negotiate with my fiance over either building a walk-in closet or the man cave.
Oh, that's easy. Man cave.
What would you suggest?
Hey, Kwame, you're representing the men out here. Hey, be careful.
Well, let's start off with a conversation about bias and how I can't answer this question. That is a tough one. That is a tough one. I think one of the things you need to ask first is why you want a man cave. What's the reason? If it's me, I realize that there are very few places left in this house that are sacred. Kai has his room. I don't want to be there, you know, everything else is really shared. There is a refuge aspect that comes with a man cave. So I would want him to really clearly say what it is that he wants out of this man cave and then try to find a way to give it to him that doesn't include taking away from your budget of a walk-in closet and figure out what else is beneficial to him. What else does he want outside of the man cave? Because there might be some other things that he wants that you might be able to give him while still maintaining the walk-in closet. So I think expanding his horizons in that regard would be important, because when people want something and they see only one way of getting that thing, they get tunnel vision and they don't think very creatively. So I think the questions that you need to ask are figuring out why he wants it, his timeline, and then what potential other alternatives could exist for him.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Right. Hey, well,
guys, I'm not a traitor. I'm not a traitor. I promise.
No, that sounded very win-win. I liked it. It didn't have to be an either-or. It can be a both-and. So I like that.
You're on a roll. My last one is about the holiday season's coming up. Thanksgiving is around the corner. And so I'm negotiating with my family and friends on, you know, I'd like to get them to supply all the foods and beverages for Thanksgiving, and I supply the home. What do you think? How do we do that?
Man, that sounds reasonable. I think the first thing that you do is you start off with the anchor. And so anchor, like I said, it applies in social situations too. And so I could say, first of all, listen, I think the most important thing that we need is a gathering place, because it's not about the food, it's about the family. And I want to provide that place for the family. The question is, who provides the food? So we're starting from a completely different place. So you need to control the discussion. You need to start right now if you haven't yet. Just say, listen, I want to host, and I know it's a hassle for people to do the cleanup and provide housing for the family. Listen, let me tell you this. I'll take care of all of that. The only question I have is who is going to provide the food, and then start the conversation from there, because we're changing the starting point. Now we're not even discussing. Yeah, we're not even discussing you in any capacity doing anything with the food. You're saying, which one of all of you is doing the food?
And you've already set the table, quote unquote.
And nobody's going to go against that, because you look like the guy that's making the biggest sacrifice by providing the space.
Right. Exactly. And you want, listen, when it comes to concessions, you want the other person to feel as though it hurts. Never make it seem as though what you are giving them was easy to give, because then they'll just say, yeah, I mean, you should have given it. It was easy to give.
Well, my brother, I don't say this too often, but you have been fantastic. Yes, you are the negotiating king. You got to let our audience know where to get more of Kwame. Where can they go?
Thank you. Well, I will give you access to the podcast. So Negotiate Anything is the name of the podcast. Number one negotiation podcast in the world. We just hit a million downloads.
We're
pretty pumped about that. And also I have a book called Nobody Will Play With Me. It's all about confidence in conflict, figuring out how you can get that confidence to have the difficult conversations, start to get more of what you want out of life. And also free guides. If you go to the website, AmericanNegotiationInstitute.com/guide, you can get a free negotiation guide that helps you to systematically prepare for your negotiation. A general business negotiation, salary negotiation, and conflict resolution guide all in one. And you can get that for free on the website.
And we love free around here. And any handles or anything?
Yeah, LinkedIn is the best place to reach me. I'm on Instagram as well, Kwame underscore Christian. But LinkedIn is the best way to get in touch with me. And I also share a lot of video content on LinkedIn as well.
And he does respond. That's how I met Kwame, just so you know. He is very, very approachable and just amazing. So thank you so much for everything you brought to our show today.
My pleasure.
Yes, it was amazing. And if you guys want, you know, have any more questions you want to send in, please email us your questions at tbgwgc@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Black Guys Good Credit. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review to make it easier for others to find us. Like Chuck Gibb, who said, "First off, I love the vibe and friendly conversational tone. They provide quality, real-world advice with engaging action items. A must for the up-and-coming investor as well as a seasoned professional. I guess I'm somewhere in between." Well, thank you, Chuck Gibb. We love you. And my name is Dion Nichols, a lady with the history, the stats, and the cold, hard facts. And I'm out.
I'd like to thank Kwame for coming on today. I learned so much. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought my negotiation skills were good for the things that I need to do. Blew it completely out of the water. I'm definitely listening to all your stuff, man. I've definitely learned a lot today. We learned that the most important thing in negotiation is to make an attempt. A wise man once said, "Don't fear negotiation and don't negotiate out of fear." When opportunity knocks, make sure you're there to answer the door. I'm Derek Poe, the Credit King, a.k.a. the younger half of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Signing off.
Kwame was fantastic. I wish I had a more exciting bottom line or takeaway than I can from what Kwame provided through this whole show. But I guess my takeaway would be learn more about negotiating. Go to his website, follow him, and get more information, because I learned a lot of strategic things just by listening to him today. So I'm hooked. So get more. That's my bottom line. Kwame, once again, thank you for coming on the show. I'm Sean from Two Black Guys with Good Credit. Keep your money where it belongs, in your damn pocket, people. And I'm out.
This sponsorship break is brought to you by Clean. Clean is a financial literacy program designed to educate youth in a fun and interactive way through class lessons, workshops, and web seminars. To bring it to a school or organization near you, please visit www.financiallyclean.com.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.